Most esoteric subject matter. What does esoteric mean? Huh? Yes. Another way? Secret. Very secret. The most secret esoteric subject matter only for those who are initiated. Initiated into what? Into the esoteric meaning of the Bhagavatam and its purpose. Initiate means to begin. So those who are on that path should hear this or can hear this. So these chapters of the Bhagavatam, and we're reading from Prabhupada's study of the 10th canto of Krishna, about Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These chapters of the Bhagavatam are the most intimate. Because they reveal Krishna, they speak about Srila Sukadeva Goswami, speaks about Krishna in his most intimate secret feature, and that is as the lover of Gopina, the lover, beloved, lover and beloved of the cowherd damsels of Vrindavan. So, it is actually so difficult to understand. Why? Because it is Naralila. What does Naralila mean? Where Krishna acts according to the understanding of how a man or a human being in this world will act. Of course, the Naralilas that we perform are actually imitation Krishna Lilas. And that is the very nature of our conditioning in the material world. Bewildered by false ego, ahankara, vimudatma, we act as if we were capable of enjoying. But rather than being capable of enjoying in this world, life teaches us, actually society is supposed to teach us, that we cannot enjoy in this world. Krishna himself certifies the material world as tukalayam ashashvatam. And he says we should leave this miserable place. It is temporary. It is miserable. It is fraught with dangers. It cannot end in a happy way. There are no successes on the material level in the material world. This is the message that life actually gives us. If we don't figure it out by the time we're 30 or 40, we can go through life completely imagining, bitterly imagining that there's some happiness on the material level and some success on the material level at the end. Those who give us this hope that there's a big pot of gold at the end of the material rainbow. And there are people who promise that and by their activities wish us to emulate them. These people are the greatest bluffers and the greatest cheaters. And their happiness is making us think that they are happy. And they don't get any more happiness than that, than having people envy them. This is the material world we should, by the time we're 30, it's hard to figure it out in contemporary society by the time you're 20 or 15, even though you already have enough experience to understand
But it's very difficult to figure it out because the propaganda of materialistic society is so powerful that we think, yes, 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 everyone is enjoying. I'm also going to enjoy. I'll carve out my piece of the pie and I shall eat it in my leisure and enjoy like anything. But actually, society should be teaching us, rather than, yes, strive for this, strive for happiness here in the material world, society should be teaching us that we should not strive for happiness in the material world, because we will end up just simply miserable. Society should be teaching us, culture should be teaching us, that there's another purpose to life in this world, and that other purpose is spiritual, that other purpose is service, it's service to others, and ultimately it's service to God, service to Krishna. That is what society should be teaching us. Instead of cranking everyone up to enjoy, to enjoy, to enjoy, to consume, to enjoy, to die. Instead of trying to convince people their hope is in science and in hard work and economic development, they should be teaching us our hope is in the mercy of the Godhead, the mercy of Krishna. But this is, the society is basically, Kali has taken control of everything, of all the propaganda mechanisms of the world, and is bringing so much discontent into people's heart. So many promises and so much discontent. And yet, Kali's genius, the genius of Kali Yuga, is despite the fact that no one has any trust in government, in this and that, in family, in the propaganda, no one has any trust in everything, and everyone's in anxiety about either diseases or paying off their credit cards, or whether their wife or husband's going to run away from something, or their children are going to sue them in court, or something or another. Everyone's in so much anxiety. Some dread disease is going to, some bird's going to give them some killer disease or whatever. Yet everyone amazingly thinks that we're making advance in it. This is Kali's greatest triumph, in a sense. Completely bewildering everyone, because everyone is miserable and their anxieties and miseries are increasing. Crime is increasing. Poverty is increasing. The price of petrol is increasing. Everything increases. And everyone is, and therefore everyone has to work harder, is more anxiety, and yet everyone is thinking things are getting better on some level. Now how Kali has pulled that off, you have to really, you have to give a good con job credit. And the happiness is always just around the corner in the promise. Because the material world, again, is not made for our happiness. It is simply not made for our happiness. Rather, the spiritual world is made for our happiness. And the difficulty of understanding the happiness of the material world is that we view it through our material vision, and we superimpose our material conceptions. Superimpose our material conceptions on the spiritual world, and therefore think that the basic principle governing the spiritual world is the basic principle governing the material world, because that's the basic principle that governs my life. So here, in this chapter of the Bhagavatam, the 29th chapter, which Prabhupada in the Krishna book is called the Rasa Dance, or the Introduction to the Rasa Dance, it's going to describe how Krishna calls the gopis by playing his flute in the middle of the night. And he's standing under a tree. And that place is still existing in Vrindavan, Mamsivat. He's standing under a tree and playing his flute Vat means a particular type of a tree. Banyan tree, aswatam tree. And then the moon is full, the Yamuna is flowing nearby. And the moon is very, very big. It's full when it just rises in this season, the Sarat season. It is so big and it illuminates the area. It is bright yellow. The atmosphere is cooling. It is sweet. And as the sun has set, the moon is placing, as if welcoming its lover, the western horizon. This is what's described. The moon is placing kunkum upon the western horizon, a reddish color. And the atmosphere is fragrant. The breezes are blowing very gently. And it is so sweet and peaceful and charming. And Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, plays his bhamsi. He plays his flute in very, very deep, heart-pulling notes and melodies. And he calls all the gopis to come out of their homes. And we'll hear how they leave their homes, they leave their families, the married ones leave their children, their babies, they leave their cooking, they leave their husbands, they leave their brothers, they leave their mothers-in-laws, and go running to Krishna as if hypnotized in a trance. And there Krishna is, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all attractive. And this is the highest point that's described in the Bhagavatam, or one of the highest points. And it is the highest point of God realization. How is it possible that this is spiritual even? What to speak of the highest point of spiritual? How can we understand this? How can we even accept it? It appears even immoral, unethical, inappropriate, imaginary. How can we accept it? What to speak of understanding it? Therefore, so many materialistic people, when commenting or thinking about this point of these chapters of the Bhagavatam, they think it is some kind of an allegory. It's not real. It's just something to give us an idea about something, or it's just to attract us away from matter. But people don't understand what it really is. And what it really is Krishna exchanging the highest point of spiritual love with his purest, most beloved gopis. How can we understand this? First, we'll start with the question, how can we accept that it's even true? So what is an answer to that? So one answer is, Shastra says that we have no other access to these spiritual truths other than what the revealed scriptures say. And what is, before we get to that one, there's a reply to that for the materialistic mind. But before we deal with that, we can also say that if God is a person, we have to accept that God is a person. And therefore the essence or the highest or that which is to be gained in our relationship with him is love. We love him, he loves us. So therefore, how is love judged as higher or lower? How is love judged? This type of love is better than that type of love. And the answer is by intimacy. Because, or we could say by completeness of love, or fullness, or purity of the love, the purity of the unselfishness. This brings intimacy. And there is no greater intimacy than the rasa, or the relationship, or the sweet taste of the relationship that's described here between Krishna and his young, beloved gopis. This is the most intimate and innocent of all loving exchanges. most intimate and most innocent. So it's natural on one level to accept that this is the highest spiritual exchange possible with Krishna, with God, because it is the most intimate. And nothing can be more intimate than this, because it's full and it's completely innocent and it cares only for the pleasure of the beloved. So that's one explanation, perhaps more on the intellectual platform. And one could challenge it by saying you assume that God is a person. But yes, we won't go into the arguments why God must be a person. But assuming that he is, it's clear that our relationship with him is one of loving service, bhakti. So we say, perhaps even a stronger argument, because whatever argument one gives on the intellectual platform, one can give an opposing argument. But a stronger argument is that argument about Shastra, that there is no other pramana, there is no other proof to understand things that are beyond the possibility of our conception, material conception, other than Shastra. It is revealed. But then how do we know, and this is the argument in Prabhupada, it's this: how do we know that Shastra is actually true? Maybe some person just made it up and wrote it down. And there's been people in the last 50 years who've tried to write imitation Shastras, saying that they're imitation, but trying to put their wisdom in books and imitating the style of the Bible and things like that, and saying that we've made it up, I'm the author, but it's just as good. That the prophet by Cahill Gilbrand has basically done that. But of course it isn't the same. But how do we know that this isn't just some wise, maybe he believed it, but how do we know? And the ultimate, and really the only answer to that question, and the only answer to the question, how do we know that this isn't just something material that's being described, giving it a label of spiritual, is that the greatest and purest of the sages, the acharyas, have accepted these holy writings as the absolute truth. Personalities who pushed away, eschewed any material dealing. Sukadeva Goswami, who wandered around unclothed, he was so detached from everything material, so beyond the physical platform and having no taste for it at all, completely austere, wandering around, completely austere, completely fixed in spiritual life. He took the greatest pleasure in hearing and reciting the Bhagavatam. It can't be material. But not only Sukadev, who lived 5,000 years ago, someone may say, oh, did Sukadev really even exist? But we know that Srila Rupa Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Narottama Das Thakur, Baladev Vidyabhusan, Jagannath Das Babaji, Gorkhasrud Das Babaji was so austere. So austere. These persons were, they were truly Atmaramas. They did not have any desire to extract pleasure from the realm of matter. They were beyond that. And yet they were fully satisfied. This cannot be imitated from the material platform. I can try my best using my strength of mind or willpower or intelligence to say I'm not going to get any pleasure from on the material level. But if I'm not gaining pleasure from the spiritual level, I will never be able to hold myself on that platform by my own power. Because by nature, ananda maya vyasat, by nature, the soul is seeking pleasure. And if we don't have the qualification or ability to get it from the material platform, we will be forced. We will be forced to search on the spiritual, on the material platform for that pleasure. We will not be able to stay neutral. Therefore, the yogis and renunciants are always in a precarious position, because if they don't get spiritual pleasure, they will and must fall down to the on the material level, despite the fact that they remove themselves from society. It is not possible to remain aloof from the seeking material pleasure unless one is spiritually satisfied. So the greatest of tyagis, of the most austere personalities, Raghunath Das Goswami, he didn't sleep, he didn't eat, practically speaking, actually speaking, didn't sleep, did an hour and a half, 2 hours a night, sleeping, eating just a little bit of buttermilk every few days, and his eyes always filled with tears. His body was weak, but his existence was on a different level. He didn't desire pleasure on that level. He had that pleasure as a youth. His parents were offering him millions and millions and millions of dollars, if transferring it into today's currency, and he had no interest in it. And persons like this, Srila Rupa Goswami, they got the greatest relish from these sections of the Shastra, of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that, in my understanding from hearing from Srila Prabhupada, is the ultimate answer to the question, how do we know it's true? How do we know it's not a figment of someone's imagination? How do we know that this is what the highest point in spiritual life is? And the answer is that these are the facts accepted by the most exalted personalities who are free from the tendency to squeeze enjoyment out of the material world, and they were free from the cheating propensity as well. So based on their authority, which is based on the authority of Shastra, we accept this. And we can realize it ourselves gradually. But unless we accept, unless we develop faith, we cannot realize. Adho shraddha tattva sadhu sangha bhajana kriya natyana vritti syat. The beginning, of course, the platform. Even we can say in the Bhakti Lata Bija, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur has defined it, is the Shraddha of faith. So and it's based, ultimately, we have to say it is based on the Acharyas and following in the footsteps of the Acharyas. So this part of the Bhagavatam describes, we read up to the point where Krishna, the Prabhupada defined the difference between Swakya and Parakya Rasa, the beloved outside of a marital relationship is called Parakya Rasa. And this, because it's the most intimate and the most secret, and it's free from
taking anything. It is only interested in giving to Krishna. It is the highest. In the material world,
it's considered the lowest. And Prabhupada even says here, we'll read this paragraph, I'm not sure if we read this before. The material world is the perverted reflection of the spiritual world. It is just like the reflection of a tree on the bank of a reservoir of water. The topmost part of the tree is seen as the lowest part. Similarly, parakiras, when pervertedly reflected in this material world, is abominable. When people therefore imitate the rasa dance of Krishna with the gopis, they simply enjoy the perverted, abominable reflection of the transcendental parakiras. There is no possibility of enjoying this transcendental parakiras within the material world. It is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam that one should not imitate this parakiras, even in dream or imagination. Those who do so drink the most deadly poison. And the result of drinking deadly poison is you kill yourself. So here it continues. When Krishna, Srila Prabhupada continues, when Krishna, the supreme enjoyer, just that simple point, in parenthetically inserted, that means just defining Krishna. When Krishna, the supreme enjoyer, desired to enjoy the company of the gopis on that full night of the Sarat season, full moon night. Exactly at that moment, the moon, the lord of the stars, appeared in the sky, displaying its most beautiful features. So Krishna, the supreme enjoyer, desired to enjoy. So an enjoyer needs an object to enjoy. We cannot enjoy in this world. Same point again. It is not possible for us to enjoy in this world. It is only possible for us to suffer in this world. This is the very nature of the material world. And every bit of enjoyment we get ultimately brings us suffering. Because one reason is because whatever you enjoy, because we want to enjoy, we become attached to it. Whatever gives us pleasure, we become attached to. And the nature of the material world is jnana-vivanta-kaunteya. Yeah. It has a beginning and an end. So therefore, that causes us pleasure and we become attached to it. Ends in that same thing is the cause of our suffering. Dukkha-yona-yivate. We cannot enjoy here. And as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, that for one who accepts this principle that it is not possible for me to enjoy in the material world, in this world, such a person has taken the greatest step forward in spiritual life. Sometimes we keep our little hopes hidden in the back that I'll get a situation where I can enjoy. It's not possible. Because Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. Only Krishna. Only Krishna. So when he desired to enjoy, what did he want to do? He wanted to enjoy the company of the gopis on the full moon night of the Sarat season. So why is he the supreme enjoyer? First of all, is he allowed to do that? Yes. Because to enjoy, you have to control. That's why the demonic mentality is Ishwaraham, Aham Bohi. I am the controller, and therefore I'm the enjoyer. You can't be the enjoyer without being the controller. And Krishna can be the enjoyer because he's the Parameshwar. He's the supreme controller. We can't be the enjoyers because we can't control. Life goes out of control. The material energy resists our controlling it. The scientists promise us that we will control the material energy. That is the basic promise of materialistic science. We will control the material energy, and by doing so, we will remove all miseries from this world. We will conquer the weather, we will conquer disease, we will conquer death, we'll replace your teeth, your liver, your, what else? Kidneys, your heart,
kneecaps.
Huh?
Kneecaps,
hips. This is like a car, yantra rudan. We'll just bring it in, give it a service, change the oil, change the parts that are broken. This is the promise, and that way you'll live forever. No more disease, no more old age in this way. We'll control the weather, we'll control death. But just check, scrutinize the results of that promise against reality. We've made so much progress in the last 100 years. Are people not getting sick anymore? Are people not getting old anymore? Are people not dying anymore? So Prabhupada would challenge what they have done. Just promise and take money. He didn't say that part, but that's basically the situation. Is the death previously, in previous ages, the death rate was 100%. Everyone born died. Now, what percent is it? Is it 99%? 99% of the people born die? Have we improved? No. Krishna can enjoy because he is the supreme controller also. The two go together. Ishwaraham Mahambhogi. Krishna can actually say that. What right does he have to enjoy? I can't enjoy. Why should he be allowed to enjoy? Thinking like that is called what? Envy. Yes, exactly. And that's why we're here in the material world, because we don't want to accept that he has the legitimate right to be the supreme enjoyer. And he has the right to interplay and interact with his energies for his pleasure. And when the energies of Krishna, we have to test the shakti, his marginal energy, when we accept our position as facilitating Krishna's enjoyment, then we are elevated in our ability to enjoy, like the servant of the king. If he serves, he lives in the palace, he eats royal food, he enjoys on the level of the king on a certain level. So Krishna, the supreme enjoyer, he desired to enjoy the company of the gopis. Who are the gopis? This is his internal energy, his spiritual energy, his greatest, most intimate, beloved devotees, innocent and purely want to serve him on that full moon night of the Sarad season. And here is how, in Prabhupada, the next part of the sentence explains why Krishna is a supreme enjoyer. Exactly at that very moment, the moon, the lord of the stars, appeared in the sky displaying its most beautiful feature. The one I want to enjoy, always the universe doesn't cooperate. When Krishna wants to enjoy, because he's a supreme enjoyer, the whole, all of Vrindavan cooperates. The whole of existence, the spiritual world, cooperates to set the scene for his enjoyment with his beloved devotees in each of the different rasas. The full moon, and then Prabhupada just tells how beautiful the full moon night is of the Sarat season. It is the most beautiful night of the year. In India, the moon is, when it first rises, is huge and orange, so big. In India, there's a great monument called the Taj Mahal in Agra. You have ever seen Agra? How have you seen it?
Sorry.
When did you see it?
Oh, that was a long time ago. That was about 10 years ago.
Okay.
Oh,
Raise your hand if you've been to the Taj Mahal in Agra. You've been there? I've never been there. Banki Bihari Prabhu, you have seen? Now, tourists, Videshis, they charge 250 rupees to go in. For Videshis, only like 5 rupees or something like that. In Agra, a city in the Uttar Pradesh province, and the tomb is made of first-class marble stone. During the night of the full moon of the Sarat season, many foreigners go to see the beautiful reflections of the moon on the tomb. Thus, this full moon night is celebrated even today for its beauty. So, say it's so beautiful. It's the most beautiful of nights. And Krishna chose that night for this pleasure excursion with his beloved gopis. When the full moon rose in the east, it tinged everything with a reddish color. With the rising of the moon, the whole sky appeared smeared by red kumkum. When a husband, long separated from his wife, returns home, he decorates the face of his wife with red kumkum. This long-expected moonrise of the Sarat season was thus smearing the eastern sky. So this was a stimulant, an udipan, for the ecstatic loving exchange between Krishna and the gopis. Everything, again, cooperates for Krishna's pleasure. The appearance of the moon increased Krishna's desire to dance with the gopis. The forests were filled with fragrant flowers. The atmosphere was cooling and festive. When Lord Krishna began to blow his flute, the gopis all over Vrindavan became enchanted. Their attraction to the vibration of the flute increased 1,000 times due to the rising full moon, the red horizon, the calm and cool atmosphere, and the blossoming flowers. All these gopis were by nature very much attracted to Krishna's beauty. And when they heard the vibration of his flute, they became apparently lustful to satisfy the senses of Krishna. They became apparently lustful to satisfy their own senses. But their actual desire of their superficially lustful behavior was to satisfy the senses of Krishna. This is the nature of Vrindavan. This is exactly the opposite of the material world. When people go and meet in the material world, the center is always their own pleasure. And as soon as their meetings and their dealings together, intimate or non-intimate, do not satisfy their own pleasure with themselves to the center, it is broken off. If they find another center or whatever, another person that satisfies them more, it is broken. So this is the opposite of what occurs in the spiritual world. And this is the training that we are to undergo in the material world to become qualified to live in the spiritual world. And that training is to develop our love for Krishna in such a way that we only wish to satisfy Him. That there is no selfishness. Anyabhi lasita sunyam jnanakama anavrita anakulena Krishna anushilanam bhakti uttama. This uttama bhakti, this pure bhakti, shuddha bhakti, is the process of attaining the perfectional stage of prema bhakti. These are the teachings of Mahaprabhu. Unselfishly performed devotion without a tinge of selfishness, either on the karma or jnana level. The jnana level means desire for liberation, removal of suffering. It is self-centered, it is self-serving. I'm doing this because I'm tired of suffering in the material world. And when my spiritual path causes me suffering, why bother being on it? This is not pure devotion, nor is karma. Anya abhilasita sunyam. There is no abhilas. There's no other desire, anya, no other desire other than to please Krishna. And that is what Vrindavan is. It is every single living entity there has no other desire than to bring Krishna pleasure. They don't care for their own selfish satisfaction. They only care for Krishna's pleasure. Only care to please Krishna. That cannot be artificially done. That is a product of their love. To love Krishna in that mood carries one to Goloka Vrindavan. It is very rare, but that is the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the gopis became apparently lustful, but actually it was only apparent from the material point of view or from the external point of view, because everything that the residents of Vrindavan and gopis do is for Krishna's pleasure. Krishna wants to enjoy, and they want to be enjoyed by Krishna. That is Vrindavan. So immediately upon hearing the vibration of the flute, they all left their respective engagements and proceeded to the spot where Krishna was standing. While they ran very swiftly, all their earrings swung back and forth. They all rushed towards the place known as Vamsivat. Some of them, before they left and ran to Krishna, they were, practically speaking, they were hypnotized by Krishna's flute. They were, the word that Prabhupada used here, they were enchanted. The gopis all over Vrindavan became enchanted. There were not 2 or 3 or 5 or 20 or 100 or 200 or 1,000 or 20,000 or 100,000. They were, practically speaking, unlimited gopis. And Krishna enchanted them and called them by the sound of his flute. Immediately upon hearing the vibration of the flute, they left whatever they were doing and proceeded to the spot where Krishna was standing. While they ran very swiftly, all their earrings swung back and forth. They all rushed towards the place known as Vamsivat. Raise your hand if you've been to Vamsivat. Yes, so many times. Some of them, so this is what they were doing before they left. Some of them were engaged in milking cows, but they left their milking business half finished and immediately went to Krishna. One of them had just collected milk and put it on the milk pan on the oven to boil. On the stove, it was starting to boil because you have to boil the milk to make it suitable to drink and free from all disease or whatever. But she did not care about whether the milk overboiled and spilled. She immediately left to go to see Krishna. Some of them were breastfeeding their small babies. Some were engaged in distributing food to the members of their families. But they left all such engagements and immediately rushed towards the spot where Krishna was playing his flute. So to the materialistic mind, it sounds cruel. Foolish, cruel, immoral. They were feeding their babies. The baby is completely dependent on them. If the mother doesn't feed their young children, their babies, their breast milk, the baby will die. They were feeding, serving the food they had cooked to their family members. They were milking the cows. They had the milk pot boiling. And what will happen if you leave the milk pot boiling and you don't tend to it? What happens? Oh, cook. And after it evaporates, what happens? And how does it smell when it burns? It's terrible. You never get it out almost for days and days. They didn't care about anything. They only cared about pleasing Krishna. They were extremists. They only had one thought, not a second thought. Anya vilasita, any other thought, sunyam, zero. This is love. This is the degree of love that the Braja Gopis had for Krishna. Some were engaged in serving their husbands. Some were engaged in eating. They themselves were eating. But neither caring to serve their husbands nor eat, they immediately left. On the material platform, these things appear improper, completely improper. But from the spiritual point of view, they are the highest. The highest on the spiritual level appears in the reflection as the lowest. Some of them wanted to decorate their faces with cosmetic ointments and to dress themselves very nicely before going to Krishna. But unfortunately, they could not finish their cosmetic decorations nor put on their dresses in the right way because of their anxiety to meet Krishna immediately. They were being pulled by Krishna's flute. They were enchanted. Their faces were decorated hurriedly and were haphazardly finished. Some even put the lower part of their dresses on the upper part of their bodies and the upper part on the lower part. Well, all the gopis were hurriedly leaving their respective places. So what's going to happen? They're feeding their husbands, they're feeding their family members, they're feeding their babies, and they suddenly drop everything and start leaving for Krishna. Now what do you think their husbands and father-in-laws and mother-in-laws are going to do? They're going to say, oh, very nice, you're going to see how Krishna now, dropping everything. Yeah, it's all right, just drop the baby, it's all right. Now what are they going to do? Their husbands, their brothers, their fathers were all struck with wonder to know where they were going. Being young girls, they were protected either by husbands, elderly brothers, or fathers. And all their guardians, these were guardians, they forbade them to go to Krishna. They put up great obstacles. But they disregarded them. Then Prabhupada gives a comment. When a person becomes attracted by Krishna and is in full Krishna consciousness, he does not care for any worldly duties, even though very urgent. Krishna consciousness is so powerful that it gives everyone relief from material activities. Srila Rupa Goswami has written a very nice verse wherein one gopi advises another, "My dear friend, if you desire to enjoy the company of material society, friendship and love, then please do not go to see this smiling boy Govinda, who is standing on the bank of the Jamuna and playing his flute, his lips brightened by the beams of the full moonlight. Don't go and see him," Rupa Goswami says. "Because if you go and see him, he will steal your heart and there will be nothing left for your material activities. So if you're attached to your material activities, don't go and see Govinda." So Srila Rupa Goswami indirectly instructs that one who has been captivated by the beautiful smiling face of Krishna has lost all attraction for material enjoyment. This is the test of advancement in Krishna consciousness. A person advancing in Krishna consciousness must lose interest in material activities and personal sense gratification. Prabhupada said this many, many, many times. You don't need a certification to know from anyone externally to know if you're advancing or not in Krishna consciousness. This is the taste, the thirst for material life and attachment to material objects must diminish if one is in fact advancing. So now, Prabhupada will continue describing other facets of, the, of this great march of the gopis to serve Krishna, and Krishna after Krishna calls them, because this was the prayer of some of the gopis in during the Katyayani Vrat that we heard, where Krishna had stolen their clothes. They were praying to Katyayani or Yogamaya to make Krishna our husband. So that opportunity will be awarded them at this time, those blessings. Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments?
This is beyond the comprehension of material consciousness. If on the hiking, when they hover the flute, they are beside themselves, they don't even know what they are doing. They are just pulled. You can't understand that they left their babies, they left the milk. They were beside themselves, they had no consciousness left after this material. They were uprooted, transported into another realm as soon as they heard it.
This is how we understand what love is. Understanding it's far beyond. People talk about love of God. This is love of God. Even when Mahaprabhu, someone said to him, "Oh, you love Krishna." He said, "No, I don't love Krishna." "But you're crying. Tears are coming from your eyes all the time." "Oh, that's just a show. If I loved Krishna, how could I maintain my body in separation from him? My miserly life still stays within this body. There is no love for Krishna." Miserly means selfish. "I'm so selfish that this in my, I still remain alive." Not only attached, but the greatest spiritualist, but detached, yes. No. The point was, specifically, this shastra that shows, that explains that these dealings between Krishna and the gopis are not materially lustful at all. And they have nothing to do with the material emotions that motivate young boys and young girls to sneak out and meet in the middle of the night. Because if that was the case, then these devotees, Sukadeva Goswami, who had no taste for those things, Raghunath Das Goswami, Srila Rupa Goswami, Srila, gave a whole list, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, their aspiration would not be to bathe in the foot dust, the dust from the lotus feet of the gopis, if it was material. That was the point. Standard ways, like everyone recognizes Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, there are so many acharyas, Ramanuja Acharya, Madhva Acharya, they all recognize the Bhagavatam. They're universal, we'd say universally accepted. They were learned scholars. They were strict practitioners. They were renunciants. And they chanted all day long. They studied. They wrote books. And they were free from the tendency to cheat as well. So it's a very, when we're talking about it on this level, we don't have to say that it takes one to know one. We say that everyone understands that these personalities are extremely holy. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the whole Sampradaya accepts them. No one will disagree with that. Jiva Goswami, Srila Jiva Goswami, all the Goswamis.
If somebody disagrees, his level of understanding things has nothing to do with the reality of what these personalities
are. Yeah. But Jason's point is, if like I am doing, I'm presenting something. Yeah. So I'm presenting, my job is to try to convince, so if people. But ultimately, it's up to, the individual, certainly, whether they accept or not, fortunate or not so fortunate. But, this is ultimately the ultimate argument. And then Prabhupada would even say, do you think they are such fools? It puts the burden on you. So you don't accept them, you think they're such fools, all the people are worshipping deities and you think they're not getting anything from it? They're just so fooled that they're praying and worshipping the deity and no realizations, no spiritual advancements. They're just fooling themselves? Huh? People, yeah. And we don't accept that argument, because if you say that I'm getting spiritual realization from my path and these people are just fooling themselves, then no one will take you seriously. It's ultimately an atheistical point of view. Either, because there's millions of people who are doing this type of worship, and they're gaining something from it. They're gaining. Or no one does things that they don't gain some shelter from, some security from, some peace of mind, some whatever. No one does things. No one can continue things like that. So you're saying that when I do it, it's real. The people of my path do it, it's real. But when these people of a different path do it, it's just their illusion.
I was afraid it would be atheist. Like Marx said, religion is the opium of the masses.
Yeah. But now it's changed. Now opium is the religion of the masses. Right? It's true, isn't it? Yeah, so he said that. But where is he now?
His philosophy seems to live very much.
Hey, what?
His own philosophy seems to live very much for the people who follow him.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a materialist. So he not only was he an atheist, he was a materialist. A materialist as defined by Feuerbach, one of his precursors, Marx's precursors, is that I believe what I can see. And religion is getting in the way of people dealing with the here and now. And if we deal with the here and now properly, just accept it, deal with it properly, if we act rationally, scientifically with it, then we'll make advancement. So where is the advancement? This is the modern mind. Rationalistic, reductionistic. If we just Voltaire, if we just act rationally and get rid of all this primitive belief systems, then we'll deal properly with the world. And really what people want, is economic development. So let's just concentrate on reality and get on with it. So how much has society advanced by this philosophy? That was what we were saying in the beginning. It's actually becoming more and more hellish. And an illusion. We can take it, I could say, yes, God exists. And you could say, no, God doesn't exist. Yes, he does. No, he doesn't. So, you know, we could go like that. So there's no argument like that. But let's see the result of applying your philosophy and my philosophy. We should serve God and we shouldn't. We should just serve economics. So what is your, what you have done? You cannot prove that mine is wrong. You can say, I don't think it's right, but you can't prove that there is no God in control. You can't prove that. It's not possible. But your philosophy is materialistic. You believe what you can see. How have you improved things according to what we can see? We see people in great anxiety, and look at the youth of today. Just look. The families of today. Previously, in primitive times, it's not that the husband and wife both had to work and the children were placed in care centers all day long. The kids were brought up with affection by the mothers, and the fathers would work in the fields or whatever. But now, your advancement means the families have fallen apart. Both husband and wife have to work. Both are in debt. The more enjoyment is there, the more suffering is there. Always fear of nuclear holocaust or this or that. So what you have done? So anyway, we can fight with them pretty well, I think. Of course, if someone has that mentality, you know, you ultimately can't convince them. But when you fight with someone like that, you're fighting for the innocent people, not for the people who are the determined atheists. Because the innocent people, sutra ebya upasate tepi chatit niranyeva mrityum shuti pranayana, if they can hear, because all the propaganda that the innocent people get nowadays is atheistic. You know, from evolution to whatever, it's all atheistic. So it's good if they hear arguments against all the atheism and the materialism. Maybe they'll wake up and start questioning it. Prabhupada was so heavy, you know, what they have done. You know, when he would be so strong like that, you almost want to say, take the other side, you know. But Prabhupada, they've given us, you know, at least they've given us the internet or something, bigger hard drives, bigger and better hard drives. But he was so heavy. He wasn't mental about it at all. That the progress that they've given us is like the progress of our age. It just brings us closer to death. The more our age progresses, because there's nothing wrong with it on one level, but it's so atheistic the way that they deal with it, and arrogant, and that ruins everything. Their atheism ruins everything. When you were growing up, how many of the students in the local schools had to go to child psychologists?
The child psychology didn't exist. Even home psychology didn't exist. When I was a student, it's not that long.
But that was, yeah, it wasn't so. It was in the 1400s.
Psychology was a small part of philosophy. It wasn't an easy find, and then science is.
Yeah. Okay. See, and also we have to, because I find, you know, for myself, having been brought up in this materialistic culture, that I need the strong medicine myself. Otherwise, I start thinking, yeah, it's not so bad. At least we have the shopping malls and everything, and you know, it's an advancement. Refrigerators to keep the food in. But it isn't. We have genetically modified apples that taste like potatoes. Prabhupada was so bold, so strong, so uncompromising. He just didn't believe in materialism.
Yes. The other simply don't know that. Yeah.
I remember when I was in the university in the 60s, we used to ask the students, what do you think about Lenin? And all the students would say, he writes great songs. That's how much influence all these Marx and Lenin have.